Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live and local sports talk from the upstate for the upstate with G-Mac, JC, and Lonzo. This is The Huddle on ESPN Upstate.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome back. It's The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Greg McKinney, JC Sherbert, and Lonzo here. You can call us at 844-GSP-ESPN. Get us on the text line, 71307, driven by Carolina Coaches RV Superstore. Or you can find us on Twitter, at ESPN Upstate. Rajon Rondo is stirring it up again and causing lots of folks in Chicago to have to react. Bulls stars Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade say they have no problem with Rondo after he criticized the team's veterans on Instagram. Rondo made headlines when he defended the young guys on the Bulls, and he wrote, "If anything is questionable, it's the leadership." Rondo's rant was posted after Wade and Butler publicly called out their teammates following the loss on Wednesday to the Hawks. Here is what Herm Edwards, I know he's a football guy, but he comments on team sports. Here's what he had to say about the Instagram post of Rondo.
Your private matters need to stay private. You know, team is like a family. It's no different than when you have children. You know, you discipline your children behind closed doors. You don't go out in public and, you know, discipline your children in front of the neighbors. You don't do that. You know, my mom used to tell me all the time, she said, you know, when you get a little older now, we didn't have a dryer when I grew up. I mean, we had a washer. We didn't have a dryer. Couldn't afford a dryer right away. You know, so you had to hang your clothes on the laundry, you know, on the line in the backyard. He said, let me tell you something now. She said, if you got holes in your underwear, you don't hang those in the backyard. You don't let the neighbors see that.
Yeah.
Okay, there's certain pieces of laundry you don't put your underwear out there. You know, you put your shirts out there and some pants, but you don't put your underwear out there to let the neighbors look, oh, what kind of underwear they wear? Got holes in the underwear, right? The same thing with the locker room. There's certain things that need to be said in the locker room that stays in there. That's why it's a team.
Yeah, I like Herm. That's pretty good, a little underwear analogy. I think the Bulls do have some holes in their underwear.
Mm-hmm.
Some serious holes
in
their
underwear.
They do. Rondo said the Bulls had a team meeting this morning, and they said what they needed to say, whatever that is. He said, everybody had the same platform, and we got to talk it out. General Manager Gar Foreman said the organization is extremely disappointed about players criticizing their teammates to the media and on social media. I mean, I kind of go that way. I don't want you calling out your players on social media, your teammates on social media.
No. I mean, it's not good.
No. Why do that? And Rondo's a little bit of a head case anyway. He's not helping his reputation. Mm-hmm. Mike Greenberg of Mike and Mike in the Morning here on ESPN Upstate says he can't come back. He can't stay with the team. He says Rondo has to go.
Hmm.
That's a pretty serious conclusion.
They knew what they were getting when they got him. That's been his MO for a long time, hasn't it? I mean, is anyone really surprised that he did this?
I don't know. I don't know if you're surprised, disappointed. You gotta be disappointed. I mean, do you disagree with our take that it's just bad form to do it? I mean, would you be okay with it?
Here's the problem. When new technology is brought about, you don't know what the standard is. You don't know how people are going to react to it. Twitter is still fairly new. Social media, even though we feel like it's been around for a long time, it hasn't. So we have, what is the protocol? I mean,
it's pretty simple, man. You don't call out teammates on it. Whatever the form of communication is.
There have been plenty of times when teammates have been called out whilst doing an interview. I mean, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah. Well.
And then there are guys like Phil Jackson who would do that in the media for motivation to call out his players, and people would say he was using psychology. So, I mean, I don't know. I can understand why people are upset with it, But again, you knew what you got with him. You shouldn't be surprised by it. And that's probably why if Dwayne Wade and Butler are really not upset about it, if they're not just saying that, then they know the guy. They're not surprised. They know the guy. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not surprised. Well, they defended him after he was benched back in December after they lost to the Pacers. D. Wade and Butler defended Rondo. Wade even praised Rondo for handling the benching well, handling it in a professional manner. And then Rondo comes out with this. Here's some of what he said in this Instagram post. My vets would never go to the media. They would come to the team. My vets didn't pick and choose when they wanted to bring it. They brought it every time they stepped in the gym, whether it was practice or a game. They didn't take days off. My vets didn't care about their numbers. My vets played for the team. When we lost, they wouldn't blame us. They took responsibility and got in the gym. They showed the young guys what it meant to work. Even in Boston, when we had the best record in the league, if we lost a game, you could hear a pin drop on the bus. They showed us the seriousness of the game. My vets didn't have an influence on the coaching staff. They couldn't change the plan because it didn't work for them. I played under one of the greatest coaches, and he held everyone accountable. It takes 1 through 15 to win. When you isolate everyone, you can't win consistently. I may be a lot of things, but I'm not a bad teammate. My goal is to pass what I learned along. The young guys work. They show up. They don't deserve blame. If anything is questionable, it's the leadership. That's pretty hostile toward the veterans on his team. But they're okay with it.
Well, he's tainted by being with Kevin Garnett, the most intense guy ever, and some guys like that. So, I mean, if you work in that environment and that's where you came in, don't you expect, like, every environment to be like that?
I understand how he feels. I do. But I just don't understand him putting it on Instagram. That's where he messed up. You can't like that. I don't like that. But maybe they cleared that up today in the meeting.
What if they play better now?
Yeah, maybe it worked.
Maybe it was a great ploy and it worked perfectly. They can either fall apart, they can stay where they are, or they can play better. And if they play better, he gets credit. If they play worse, he gets blamed.
Well, they do need a fire lit somewhere, so maybe he did that.
Or maybe he heard that LeBron is looking for somebody and he's trying to get out of there so he can go to Cleveland.
Everybody's unhappy in the NBA these days. Why is nobody happy? Nobody getting along these days. The Knicks have let the Clippers know they're open to trading Carmelo Anthony without getting back somebody like Chris Paul or Blake Griffin or DeAndre Jordan. They're going to have a fire sale on Carmelo Anthony, aren't they? That's where we're headed with this. The Knicks would be prohibited from trading for Griffin with Derrick Rose still on their roster because that's a rule in the collective bargaining agreement. It says teams cannot have two designated rookie max extensions on their roster via trade. And they did that with Rose during the offseason. ESPN quoting sources that the Boston Celtics let the Knicks know they have no interest in Anthony. There were exploratory talks between the teams last season. So far, the most substantive trade talks regarding Carmelo Anthony have been with the Cleveland Cavaliers. ESPN reporting that Cleveland has turned away the pitches for Kevin Love for Carmelo. Yeah, you'd be dumb to do that.
Well, there would be some people out there who would say it would be a great deal.
Ugh.
Especially last year when supposedly Kevin Love was having trouble adjusting and all that kind of stuff.
You don't want to do that. And then they've said, Cleveland's saying, no, we're not doing that. Anthony is one of only three NBA players with a full no-trade clause in his contract. LeBron's one. Dirk Nowitzki with the Mavericks is one. Asked about the proposed trade this week, he said, I don't have any reaction to it until management comes to me and says something. That's not something I can feed into at this point. He's 32 years old. Carmelo is making $24.6 million this season. Got 2 years left on his Knicks contract worth nearly $54 million. The final year of the deal is at his option in 2018-2019, and that contains a 15% trade kicker that would hike his salary to over $28 million if he is traded. I don't know. I mean, who wants Carmelo Anthony?
Yeah,
you want to build a team around him?
Would you want Carmelo Anthony on your team?
Not really. No. I mean, not unless I had a specific need, you know, where I thought he could fit in. And I don't know who that is. Who has a, you know, where is he the missing piece? Cleveland.
Yes, I mean, you know what you get with him. He's a good scorer, but he's not really a good teammate. Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem to mesh well anywhere he goes. And, you know, finally people are like, nah, you can just keep him in New York. So what if they don't find anyone to trade?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do then?
Well, you're stuck. You're stuck and you're not going anywhere.
I know in the NFL you just cut them because of no guaranteed contracts, but the contracts in the NBA are guaranteed, right?
I think he gets it, yeah. Yeah. So you just...
Is it worth just putting him on the bench or sending him home and just eating the money?
I don't know if it's gotten that bad or not. It may be. Maybe getting close to that. I mean, they'll shop him around. I think they'll trade him for a lesser player if they can find somebody. I mean, and that's going to be a blow to his ego. We'll see. I mean, he does have the no trade clause, so we'll see. But I mean, it's not going well there. It's kind of a little bit of a mess. By the way, the Hornets play the Knicks coming up tonight. It's up in New York. 844-GSP-ESPN. Text line 71307. And one more NBA note. Enes Kanter could miss up to 2 months. He has a fractured forearm because he punched a chair on the Thunder bench last night.
All you people out there who make fun of the WWE and professional wrestling saying that chair does not hurt. Now you see what happens when someone who's not a professional tries to use a chair.
Yeah.
They break their arm.
He had just slapped the floor in frustration. He walked to the bench during a timeout, slammed his fist into a padded chair. It was padded. But as he brought his arm down, the folding chair flipped up, and then he hit the metal.
Did you ever get hit with a chair?
Hit with a chair, no.
Okay, I'm just checking.
Why have you been hit with a chair?
No, remember, I mean, you've mentioned on the show.
Oh, being in wrestling?
Yeah, that you were wrestling.
They don't hit the ring announcer, man.
They do now. So
do they really?
On occasion. So I just was curious if you indeed had been hit and if they told you how to take the hit.
No, didn't Trump hit somebody with a chair?
Yeah, he hit Vince McMahon, if I recall.
I know he shaved his head, but did he hit him with a chair?
Yeah,
too?
I'm pretty sure he did.
No, I've not been taught.
It was
so
not
don't
a pretty
hit me with
swing,
a chair.
By the way.
Yeah, no, it was not. Wow, that's a lot. 2 months with that injury. That'll teach him, I guess, not to punch chairs. All right, coming up here in the huddle, we're going to get to Michael Casagrande with AL.com. Talk a little college football with him. But right now, we have another guest, and that's Michael Casagrande of AL.com. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate that.
No problem.
You cover Alabama very closely here. I know you just interviewed my cohort here, J.C. Sherbert, for a story that you published on AL.com. So I'm going to let him ask a lot of the questions, but let me just jump in and get your take on this Alabama recruiting class. Losing the national championship doesn't seem to have thrown up any roadblocks. You expect this to be, I think I saw in your story, maybe their best class ever?
That's what I've been, hearing. That's what I've been reading. My colleagues have been telling me about it. Don't cover recruiting quite as closely as JC does, but just from what I'm seeing, from what I'm reading and seeing, the number of five-star guys, top, player of the year type talent, it's, at least on paper, a pretty solid class.
How much does Nick Saban actually do? Does he visit a lot of homes himself, or does he farm most of that out to assistants?
Yeah, no, I mean, he's been doing the circuit quite a bit, this time, every year, but this time of year he's around. I know December is a pretty heavy year, but, the rules have, legislated to the point where there's a limited amount of time, in parts of the year where you're able to go around as a head coach in the spring and such. So, but no, he's quite involved.
Yeah, Michael, you wrote this article. It was interesting because it kind of took us a trip back in time a little bit and looked at all of Alabama's classes. Overall, what do you think you learned from writing it? I know you talked to me, you talked to Mike Farrell and probably some other folks. Just kind of, I thought it was a great article, very fascinating, but what did you take away from it kind of in your analysis?
Yeah, it was interesting. You were very, very helpful. I appreciate that. Just the way that people can look back on things. One of my favorite things I do every year, when they have some of the preseason magazines, they'll have a top 50 class from 10 years ago or whatever, and to just go back and see what happened to them. You know, what did the top guys do? What some of the guys who came from nowhere. It's always fun to retrospect and to regrade, you know, how things went. And just from talking to you, talking to Mike Farrell, it was interesting to see how, you know, you could say we just missed Chance Wormack. We just didn't see him, you know, what we were looking at, and we didn't think that he was going to be as productive because he was a little heavier as an interior lineman going into college from high school. So I thought that was pretty interesting just to see, I guess, where the thought process goes for the evaluators who are the ones who are assigning the star ratings that so many people follow so closely.
Alabama obviously didn't win the national title this year, and you've covered them for a while. But, you know, kind of looking at it, you know, what was it like to cover that loss to Clemson in the championship game? There aren't very many Alabama losses that I could imagine you've covered over the years. How was that as a reporter? Is that different? I mean, what was kind of the feel, I guess, afterward as opposed to having a championship, I guess, to cover?
All right, that's just a good question. It kind of felt a little bit like it did at the famous Kick Six Iron Bowl 2013. The way it just a stunning ending, the way it ended for them. But it was even more. You get to see more with locker room access being open like it is in the playoffs. And it was just a very interesting study in the psychology of seeing how these players, these coaches, kind of process what just happened on such a grand scale. And you go back into a locker room where it's a very intimate setting, very emotional, and it was very interesting to see how different people deal with it in different ways. And it was you know, I wrote a pretty long story about it the next morning, just kind of what it was like inside that locker room on the sideline in those final moments as the game was ending and after it ended. It was, as you said, a pretty different experience compared to a lot of the games covered here.
You know, being down there in Alabama, obviously there's the Crimson Tide and there's also Auburn. You know, what's the feel around Auburn? I know they just hired a new offensive coordinator in Chip Lindsey. You know, there was a time, I think, in 2013 where we sort of looked back at the last 5 years and went, well, these are the two best programs in college football, you know, cumulatively. But there's been some issues on the Plains. The last two seasons haven't been super duper. The Sugar Bowl, I thought, was more of the SEC being down than Auburn being great. You know, what's kind of your feel about Auburn, and what's the feel down there kind of at Ground Zero in Birmingham?
Well, that's another interesting question. I can't say I deal with Birmingham too often, or Auburn too often, it's an interesting study just the way there's such highs and lows of the past. You know, I've been here for the most part since 2009. I didn't have much involvement with the state, even living here since before then. But it's been interesting to see how there's been a lot of peaks and valleys with the program, and some pretty high highs and some pretty low lows at the end of the guts or the physics era. So, you know, it's kind of like you're curious to see which way it goes in this direction at this point, because they're by overachieved for a lot of the season last year and then kind of dipped at the end. So where do you go with a new quarterback sent him from Baylor? Will he be the big answer? I think that's a big interesting thing, you know, storyline entering the season this next year.
Michael, you know, looking at it this week, it was the anniversary of Bear Bryant's passing. And now we look at Alabama, they have Nick Saban, and certainly he's had approaching equal success. You know, how do Alabama folks down there that you've talked to, people around the program, sort of compare the two? I mean, do they realize, I guess, that this is the second glory era of Alabama football, or the third if you go back into the 30s? You know, what's kind of the feeling when you kind of compare Saban and Bear Bryant and all that?
That's a very good question. Good, you know, something I thought about, and I think I take a little bit of a removed view of it, since I'm not necessarily, you know, a big, you know, fan of the program or whatnot, just more of an observer. And it's just, I think it's easier from that perspective to look at it and say, you know, this is history. We're documenting history. This is a sustained success. You know, it's not like a Bear Bryant was over, you know, several decades where there were some down points, but pretty steady success, where this has pretty much stayed high the entire time since 2008. The worst season they've had since then was a three-loss year in 2010 when they were still competing into November. So it's the kind of thing where, you know, history we'll judge it one day, but you can start to see, and it's interesting. People have kind of stayed, you don't hear a whole lot of talk about it. Fans don't really want to talk about it or think about it in that context. And while it's still happening, because it's almost like you're talking about history before it's over, and they want to keep it going, and they just kind of keep their head down and keep this role going. But if you take a step back, you can definitely see that this is historic in its own, you know, different kind of way.
Talking to Michael Casagrande of AL.com here in the huddle. We appreciate you joining us this afternoon, Michael. You know, Alabama fans may not want to think about it, but eventually Nick Saban will retire and not coach the Crimson Tide anymore. And every time that comes up around here in upstate South Carolina, Dabo Swinney is mentioned as a guy that's going to get the first call. Is that kind of the feel in Alabama, or is that a little bit overstated? What do you think?
It's interesting. I've heard, you know, a lot of people, you know, there are a lot of people put all the types of dots and say it would be perfect, and then other people say that it would be wrong for him, for Dabo, that it would be a bad move for him, that he's building his own thing there. He could be more on the ground level there than trying to sustain what somebody's already done. It's one of those days where it's going to be a really fascinating situation when it goes down, to see how it all plays out. But I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's probably 50-52 where people here really want him, and other people think that it's almost too obvious that you need to think a little bit differently or bigger. But it's impossible to know until that day comes exactly what the landscape is and where people are, because, you know, you could have one bad season and his name will disappear off the list. You know, people's names rise and fall like the tides all the time. So it'll be, you know, it's almost so situational as to what's happening at that moment.
Michael, one more thing. You know, Jalen Hurts had an outstanding true freshman season. What was it like to cover him this year? I know I wrote last year that around this time, I thought Hurts had a chance to be as good as any of the true freshman quarterbacks across the country this year. I meant that more in a long-term way, though, because, you know, I watched his film. He's a coach's kid from Texas. He could throw, he could run. Did not expect him to have the season he did right away. How was he to cover this year, and what were your impressions of him?
It was a very interesting year for him. Excuse me, Alabama hasn't had a true freshman starter since the early 80s, so this was unprecedented, and it felt like, you know, especially under Saban, that it was going to be a difficult situation, a difficult thing, and for a true freshman to get to that point. And he came, he arrived in January, wasn't a huge fanfare. The year before, it was Blake Barnett was the big five-star guy coming from California. There was a lot more attention placed on that than Hurts, and then Hurts turned out to be the one guy who was able to pull that kind of feat to be a starting quarterback as a true freshman. There was talk about it. There was kind of smoke building from spring practice. Didn't see a whole lot of him. Then you saw him on spring game, the A-Day game, and he looked a lot better than probably a lot of people would have expected. And people, the light bulb started going on, kind of fueled that off-season chatter that really continued straight through practices. And in August and third series, the USC game, he's in there and really never lost the job after that.
All right, Michael Casagrande, AL.com. You can follow his work there and actually follow him on Twitter if you're so inclined. And that's BYCASAGRANDE if you want to give Michael a follow. Michael, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, man. You want to reach us on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Text line 71307. Phone number, as always, 844-477-3776. Let's get to the Friday edition of Hot Takes and Sausage.
And now, the beating frenzy of sports talk continues on Hot Takes and Sausage.
Hey, I smell bacon.
Order up on the huddle.
The SEC Big 12 Basketball Challenge, which will be highlighted by Kansas and Kentucky, once again presents a huge opportunity for the SEC in that particular sport. There's a big gap between the two leagues on the hardwood when you consider it top to bottom, and if the SEC can salvage some wins here, it will help the league's RPI come NCAA tournament time. A Power 5 league with 14 teams should not be getting an average of three teams in the big dance each and every year, and this gives the SEC an opportunity. An article on ESPN points out that Ole Miss is paying a price for the current NCAA investigation into its football program. The Rebels, who have been a mainstay in the top 20 and at times the top 10 under head coach Hugh Freeze as far as the recruiting rankings go, currently rank number 51 nationally and 13th in the SEC in the 24/7 Sports composite team recruiting rankings. The question now becomes, is this fair? Is it fair for the NCAA to have an open investigation that basically torpedoes a school's recruiting? That cannot be answered now. That will be answered when the NCAA completes its investigation and ultimately the facts are revealed. If the facts prove to be that Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze were buying players, then they deserve everything they are getting. Friday Freak, Dabo Swinney. Want proof of Clemson's reach in recruiting? There aren't too many programs that can waltz into Louisiana and snag a prospect that LSU wants, but the Tigers did just that when they got four-star running back Travis Etienne this week. Alabama and perhaps at times Texas A&M are the only programs I've seen who can accomplish such a thing on a consistent basis within the Pelican State. And it's one thing for the Tide and Aggies, both of whom are closer in proximity to Louisiana, to do that. It's quite another for a school in upstate South Carolina, too. Behold the power of a plan, of facilities, and most importantly, a national championship. And now for the sausage. On Thursday, I tweeted out a picture and a link to a story about a rat, an actual rat, in China, who the locals publicly shamed by tying him to the back of a rickshaw and putting a disciplinary post-it note on him for stealing their rice. I thought it was hilarious, but also thought it was good that they didn't kill the rat. Good humanitarian humor goes a long way. But oh no, it's Twitter. And the culture of grievance was quite strong for one particular person. I have collectively over 42,000 followers on Twitter that I started in 2009, and the vast majority of the folks have a great sense of humor. One person, however, who was clueless, accused me of promoting animal abuse by tweeting the link in the photo. He also took it a step further and sent an email to disparage me with some good folks that I have an important business relationship with. So to calm the situation and avoid said business relationship going bad, I had to take the tweet down. This stinks. I'm not sure I've ever been more astonished in my life. On top of that, I am Mr. Animal Lover, as anyone who knows me can attest to. People like this are the reason that social media and society sucks at times these days. And this guy, who went to great lengths to do me personal harm over something he wasn't smart enough to interpret the right way, is really the rat that should be publicly shamed.
Rat hater. You're a rat hater. I was going to go look for the picture, and you took it down? Why'd you take it down?
It's a rat.
It's a rat.
I had to take it down.
Rat abuse.
You know, I saw the picture. The rat did not look like he was too uncomfortable.
He looked like he was chilling.
He was out for a ride, yeah.
Nobody did anything to the rat. Well, I mean,
they didn't kill. Oh, like, look, okay, so you're in a Chinese market, and a rat keeps stealing your rice. 9 times out of 10, you're going to put a trap out for it. You're going to beat it to death with a broom. You're going to toss it in the trash. You know, and I thought this was kind of funny and actually a humane way to deal with it. Now, the rat, you know, maybe he learns and maybe he doesn't steal the rice next time because he doesn't want to get tied to the back of a rickshaw. But I thought it was great. And this guy who, you know, used to hold a pretty good position at a place that matters, tried to throw me under the bus with people that matter as far as my business goes. I think he thought I was an employee of this company, which I'm not. And, you know, to just save face, I took it down. And this guy's not a man. I mean, this guy, I would be embarrassed to be his family. I guess it says he's married and has some kids. I would be embarrassed, if I were his wife and I were his kids, that he went to these types of links over something that, you know, he considers animal abuse or something like that. So it was when I got that phone call this morning from my business associates, I was more astonished than I have been in a decade.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, of all things, you know, and look, we all tweet things that sometimes we regret. But, you know, 7 or 8 of my other followers thought it was hilarious. We shared it on the Magic 98.9 Facebook page yesterday here at Intercom. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a problem with it here. Mm-hmm. And but this one guy's like, you're promoting animal abuse. Well, you know what? Go put on a pink tutu and protest my butt next time I come to Atlanta, you jerk.
844-GSP, ESPN. Is it like, is it my imagination or Friday's days that you go off? Man, it just seems like I'm noticing a trend there.
It's a buildup.
Yeah, so builds up all week. And then,
I mean, look, I was in a great mood when I woke up this morning. I mean, then about 10 o'clock, I get this, and I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm going to be seeing this rat in my dreams.
It is a great point, though, that when you're on social media like that, that you will be shocked by the thing that sets somebody off. That, you know, you might tweet something, say, you know, I'm probably going to get some blowback on that. Well, and that goes through fine. And then something innocuous, somebody goes off.
And then there are some people, I wouldn't be one of those, who do that on purpose just for reaction.
Trolls. Well, and I'll also say this. This person had a position at a company that matters, but is also a gigantic Georgia fan and has been tweeting at recruits.
So he doesn't like you anyway. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a good relationship with most Georgia fans, but he's been tweeting at recruits, and that's the lowest form of college football fan you can get, is the people out there that tweet at recruits that think they're helping.
I think you should be pretty positive with the amount of Twitter followers you have. You have one guy who had a problem with
that's
it.
That's right.
That's a pretty good percentage, right?
Yeah, but he tried to go above my head.
Yeah, he took it to extremes.
It is the loudest voice.
Trolling you is one thing, because we get trolled all the time.
You can troll me. I mean, look,
calling trolls clients or whatever.
Yeah, trolls are fine until they cross the line, then they get blocked, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But this guy, I mean, look, if he were still in his position, I would be retweeting his tweets right now, saying, "Hey, Gamecock fans, the COO of this institution in Atlanta that's important in college football really wants Jamias Williams to go to Georgia, because that's exactly what he's doing." So yeah, this guy, I mean, he you know. I would be embarrassed to call myself a man had I done that about a rat, a story. I mean, it was a story in the Daily. It wasn't like I just photoshopped a picture of a rat tied to a rickshaw. It came from the Daily Mail. It was a new viral news story. I mean, what a, you know, I can't even really say what I want to call it right now, but I mean, you know, so, hopefully that guy, next time he decides to deal with somebody like that, looks between his legs and realizes that he's not doing very, that he probably, that he isn't a Cal Berkeley student protesting something.
RH is your new nickname. Rat Hater.
Hashtag RH.
Hashtag, yeah. Welcome back in. 844-477-3776. Text to 71307. We are 3 weeks away from the start of college baseball in South Carolina, which is a big deal. And, man, I think it's going to be as big a deal as ever, JC, this year because of the teams we have in this state. They came out with the USA Today preseason top 25 coaches poll, I guess yesterday. Yeah, yesterday afternoon. And here's what you have from the state of South Carolina. Gamecocks, number 4. Pretty good. Coastal Carolina, defending national champions, number 9. Clemson Tigers, number 12. Three of the top 12 in that poll. Pretty good little baseball state here. Pretty dominant little baseball state here.
No doubt about it. I mean, you're talking about, you know, multiple national championships since 2010, 2 for South Carolina, 1 for Coastal. Clemson was a national seed last year and certainly has had a great tradition in the sport. And all three of those teams are supposed to be pretty good this year. Also, you know, College of Charleston's been good and had runs and went to the Supers a couple of years ago. Charleston Southern's had sort of some runs. Winthrop at one point was really good. So it's a deal in this state where, you know, baseball is sort of king. And if you compare it to other states, especially states of this size, I mean, South Carolina has as good a baseball as any in the country. You know, and I think, too, Greg, if you include North Carolina in that, because UNC is usually pretty good, ECU is good, NC State, you know, Duke and Wake Forest at times are not great. Even Western Carolina's had a good run at baseball before, and we mentioned the Catamounts yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Carolinas combined, I mean, it's baseball country, and certainly I think this year, you know, the expectations at South Carolina are higher than they've been in a while. Monty Lee's second year at Clemson, and of course they returned Beers, is a great player. And then Coastal coming off the national championship. It's going to be an exciting year on the diamond. And of course, Clemson and the Gamecocks will tangle over at Floor Field for one of those games. And mm-hmm. that's good for Greenville. And,
early March.
It'll be good.
Yeah. So the season starts in 3 weeks, but, that's really when it heats up, when that rivalry series takes mm-hmm. place in early March. And we will be carrying Clemson baseball for you here on ESPN Upstate, by the way, as we did last year. So you'll be able to hear their games right here. You mentioned East Carolina. They are 10th in this poll, USA Today Coaches Poll preseason. North Carolina is 13th. NC State is 14th. And then if you just take a look at some of the SEC and ACC teams, I mean, it's just loaded. The top 25 is loaded with them.
Yeah.
TCU's first, but Florida is second. LSU is third. South Carolina fourth. Florida State fifth. So, you know, you got one team outside the SEC, ACC in the top five, and that's TCU at number one.
And that's, you know, that's kind of how it is. And it's been interesting the last few years. There have been, it used to be that you'd call it the Sun Belt, you know, the West and the South were good at college baseball. Well, the West has kind of declined the last couple years. So it's been really a regionally dominated sport.
Yeah, Cal State Fullerton, but, you know, Arizona, you would consider that.
Yeah.
West, and, I mean, it's, you know, Stanford isn't like 21st, but not a whole lot. Not a whole lot.
Yeah, which is amazing because they have, you know, programs with great history and tradition. You know, Southern Cal, Arizona State, has always been, they've always been good. It's the colder weather schools that, aren't all that great at baseball.
Yeah. They released the ACC preseason coaches poll earlier this week, and Clemson finished, and I won this thing last year, picked to finish third this year in the Atlantic Division, third in their division, behind Florida State and Louisville. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. 10 coaches picked Florida State to win the ACC championship. Clemson, Louisville, North Carolina, and NC State were picked to win it all by one coach each. Now, last year in the preseason poll, Clemson was picked fifth in the Atlantic Division, and they finished up with that 44-20 overall record and then won the ACC championship and a number one seed in the tournament in the NCAA regional before they lost last year. So, yeah, polls are polls, and certainly this is not the way it's going to finish, but I think you got to be pretty excited about where the state of South Carolina stacks up, and it'll be fascinating to see, you know, how these teams do in the state of South Carolina. I think Monty Lee's second season will be certainly a successful one. He surprised everybody his first year. This is kind of a big year for Chad Holbrook, too. I'm not saying, you know, people have talked about him not living up to Ray Tanner. I'm not suggesting that, JC, but he needs another special year for Gamecock baseball. I mean, the feeling is they're due for one. So I think it's kind of an important year.
And look, it's been since 2012 when they were last in Omaha. And if you kind of look at the Tanner era at South Carolina, the Omaha trips kind of came in spurts, and then there was a break. You know, from 98 to 2000, the first three, or 2001, the first 4 years, no Omaha. You know, next 3 years, Gamecocks were in Omaha. Then it was 6 years, and then two national championships and a runner-up, and now it's been, what, five, you know, we're 5 years out from the last trip out there. You know, I don't – does Chad Holbrook need to make it to Omaha to save his job? No, because his boss is a baseball guy and understands things happen in that sport that are just weird. And, you know, my concern going in – South Carolina has the talent to make it to Omaha. There's no question. Lots of people returning, lots of good players – being added to the program. But you can't play baseball when you've got a bunch of pressure on you. And a lot of times, you know, what Tanner was good at is taking the pressure off guys. Teams would play loose but tough. And, you know, this fan base right now, you know, I think they're almost, you know, Omaha or Fire Holbrook or something like that at this point. And I don't think that's a good type of pressure because, you know, may win 50 games and get to the postseason and, you know, choke. That's how you choke when you've got undue pressure. Yeah.
All right, back on the other side, we're going to switch gears, talk a little high school football with the new coach of the Burns Rebels, Reggie Shaw. We will do that next. And we'll take your phone calls after that if you want to get on board at 844-477-3776.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.